The following audio was recorded at the Pacific School Leadership Institute, which was held October 21 and 22, 2021, at Waits Lake Open Bible Camp near Valley, Washington.
Good morning. Blessings to each one of you. Glad to see you all here. I don't know any of you real well, except I'm glad my daughter's here. But it's good to see you all. Some faces that are acquaintances. A woman and her words. Words are powerful. They have the power to heal or to destroy, to bless or to curse. I'm sure you can all think of words that have impacted you, words that hurt or devastated you. Maybe for years it affected you. And hopefully you also remember words that brought you hope and spoke blessing to your heart. Sometimes it's the heart behind the words. The words can be the same, but it's what you feel. Words have the power to shock, to cause panic. If you hear the word cancer or to shame, you mean you do school this way, or to inspire, to heal, if you hear, I'm sorry, or I forgive you. I'm just going to read a poem here. It's not talking only about our words, but it certainly applies. Maybe you've heard it before. It's called A Builder or a Wrecker. I watched them tearing a building down, a gang of men in a busy town. With a yo-heave-ho and a lusty yell, they swung a beam and the side wall fell. I asked the foreman, are these men skilled and the kind you'd hire if you wanted to build? He gave a laugh and said, no indeed, just common labor is all I need. They can easily wreck in a day or two what builders have taken years to do. I asked myself as I went my way, which of these roles have I tried today? Am I a builder who works with care, measuring life by the rule or square, shaping my deeds by the well-made plan, patiently doing the best I can? Or am I a wrecker who walks the town, content with the labor of tearing down? O Lord, let my life and my labors be that which will build for eternity. With just a few words, we can wreck someone's life. Proverbs 18:21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Words are the most powerful force available to humanity. Use them wisely. Sow seeds of encouragement. I was going to say, I'm not going to go down the handout just exactly. I just thought it's something for you to take home. Some of the quotes and things I thought you might be glad to have. I'm going to take time to read a story. It's a very impacting story that illustrates several of the points that I want to bring out later. It's a true story by Audrey Hunt. And it's written in first person, so it's as if she's talking. It was in the 1970s that I met a young man with brown wavy hair, sad green eyes, and a mouth that never seemed to smile. His name was Edward, and he stood a little over 6 feet tall. He presented a mood of quiet, shy, and almost pitiful demure. Edward had enrolled in my music theory class at a beautiful California community college located in the small, sleepy town of Moorpark. I was proud to be on staff, offering a variety of music classes. It was hard not to notice Edward as he walked into the classroom that first day of class, a few minutes late, and positioned himself in the back row. He slumped into his chair, lowered his head with his arms folded across his chest in a defying manner. This would be his general entrance into class for the remainder of the semester. As weeks progressed and tests were given, Edward did not do well. He managed to turn in homework, which was marked way below his ability level with my notes. He never participated in the class discussion or offered to answer any questions. To my knowledge, he had no friends at school. Sometimes during lunch, I would see him sitting on the grass under a tree, munching on a sandwich and staring into space. On occasion, I would allow myself to join him to see if I could start up a conversation. I had this gnawing feeling I needed to get to know him better, but at the same time, stay professional and not allow myself to get involved. Edward rarely talked to me or to anyone. He would nod his head up and down or from side to side for a yes or a no. Nevertheless, I continued to take an interest in Edward in hopes he would open up to me. Edward missed too many classes, and when he did attend, he carried himself like an old man, as though the weight of the world sat on his shoulders. The more positive interest I directed to Edward, the better his grades became. The semester was winding down, finals were about to begin, and I worried about Edward's reaction to his final grade. In those days, I had a reputation for being a strict but fair grading instructor. It was important that I live up to my reputation. Yes, indeed, I would do it by the book, so to speak. I would make no exceptions. I had to abridge this, so now they're at the final day taking the test. Finally, Edward finished the exam, and he looked completely worn out and defeated. As he made his way to the exit, I wished him well and told him I would be giving out the final grades on Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. My thoughts continued to lead me to Edward and the final exam that he struggled with. I had trouble sleeping that weekend. Tuesday morning finally came. There was a mountain of work to do before I headed out for my classes, but none of that seemed to matter. I was a teacher, and I had a responsibility to hand out final grades today. Grades were based on classroom participation, completed assignments, exams, and attendance. Edward would be no exception. He would be given the grade he deserved. Perhaps he needed to learn the biggest lesson of all, to be responsible for his own actions. I felt good about my decision. I sat in my office looking at the long line of students waiting to meet with me to receive their final grade. I allow one person at a time to come in, take a seat, close the door, and prepare to be evaluated. After each student left my office, I would take a peek at the line to see where Edward was. After an hour or so, the line became shorter, and still there was no Edward. The last student in line met with me and left. Where is Edward? Should I wait a little longer? Am I fooling myself? He's not coming. I felt disappointed, but decided to go home. I had done all I could, but something deep within me continued to gnaw at me. My eyes filled with tears. In front of me lay the papers, the final exam. I had not decided on a grade. Well, it didn't matter, as he didn't show up anyhow. I looked down at the paper with his name on it and saw an imaginary D as his final grade. I got up from my chair, gathered my things, and closed the office door behind me. As I reached for my keys, I heard footsteps. I held my breath as I turned to see Edward standing behind me. He apologized for being late and asked if I would please give him his final grade. I hesitated, then cautiously opened the door and asked him to have a seat. His eyes were sunk with dark black circles under them, and the hollows of his cheeks were drawn. His skin was pale and his hair matted. He was wearing the same clothes he had worn for the last few weeks. "Would you like some water?" I asked him. He replied, "No, thank you," as he sat trembling. Then he spoke to me in a low, quivering voice. "I know that I'm getting a low grade on my final. I realize I haven't been participating in class and that I'm an embarrassment to others. I'm lazy, selfish, stupid, and ugly, no good for anything person. I have no place on this earth, and what's more, no one can ever love a person like me. I'm a hopeless case with absolutely no future." I could not believe my ears. I wanted to interrupt him, to convince him that he was none of these things. Instead, I let him talk. I listened with my heart and not my head. I fought back my own tears to manifest my strength and professionalism. When he had finished, I faced him, looked directly into his very sad eyes, and said, "Edward, your final grade is an A." His reaction was one of total and complete surprise. "You are giving me an A? Me? Why would you give me an A when I did such a poor job in class, on my assignments, and on my final exam? Why would you do that?" And here are the powerful words. My answer to Edwards was this: "You may appear to be a D student, but you are an A person. I believe in you. Never forget that. Now go and create the life you dream of. Believe in yourself. I will be watching. And by the way, Edward, I love you." In all my years of teaching, I have never graded a student that way. Later that evening, as I prepared to go to sleep, I began to question what I had done. Did I make a terrible mistake? At 3 o'clock, the phone rang. 3 o'clock a.m. The voice on the phone asked me if I were Edward's music theory and piano teacher. I told him yes and waited. I'm a priest from Edward's church, and I have something to tell you. I want to thank you on the behalf of Edward's family and myself for saving his life today. The priest went on to explain to me the events leading up to his phone call. Edward has an older brother who has always been angry because he is short in height, although scholastically a high achiever and excelled in sports. This brother has always been extremely jealous of the 6-foot frame of Edward and has belittled and verbally abused Edward most of his life. More powerful words. This treatment has caused him to have severe low self-esteem and a miserable existence. Edward thought of his brother as his hero and wanted desperately to please him. I'm not sure what role the parents played, but I get the impression they were wrapped up in their business and had little, if any, time for the boys. So that was the pastor talking. Now she says, I learned that the day Edward came to meet with me regarding his final grade, he had left a note on his pillow. It read, I am sorry that I could not be the kind of son and brother you all wanted me to be. All I ever wanted was to be loved. I am sorry for being unlovable. I will go now. You will find me in the closet. I'm sorry for any inconvenience I have caused you. And they found he had prepared the closet to take his own life. But he went out for a walk to digest what the teacher said and decided against it. Never doubt the power of words. The belittling that he faced for so much of his life caused hopelessness and despair. But just a little interest in him from a teacher who didn't even talk to him that much gave him hope. I'm going to be talking mostly today of spoken words, but obviously written words, something that someone can go back and look at, are important too. Speech is a gift. It's not good or bad in and of itself. It all depends how you use your words. A sarcastic comment can cripple a person emotionally. A single compliment can motivate a person to be the best that he can be. I think of the example of a knife. You can have good uses for a knife or bad. You can use a knife to prepare food, maybe cut open a knot, or even carve something beautiful. But you can also use a knife to maim, harm, or kill. Gossip kills. Criticism maims and harms and cripples. Even thoughtless chatter can harm. I think it's the thoughtless chatter sometimes that comes closer home, at least for me. We need to be purposeful about our words. The scripture is full of verses about our words. I'm just going to read some of them here. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. Proverbs 25:11. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The lips of the righteous nourish many. Proverbs 12:18 in the NIV. And here's another one from the NIV, Proverbs 12. I have the wrong reference. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit. And one more, Proverbs 11:9, with his mouth the godless man destroys his neighbor. And the King James Version uses the word hypocrite. With his mouth the hypocrite destroys his neighbor. When words are true and kind, they can change the world. I'm sure you can all think back to times when someone just said a couple words and it just made a difference in your life. I can think of a lady. I was young and insecure and 16 years old. And I was working at a nursing home. And one of the nurses there, she impacted my life so fully. And I cannot remember particular words that she said, except some teasing some words that she'd call me her biracial twin because of I had really frizzy hair, and there was something about that that just spoke acceptance to me. Later, when I was telling my daughters that this lady impacted my life so much, I was, you know what? I don't know if we ever sat down and talked. We were usually on the job, and at least not talked heart to heart talk. It was just, she spoke life to me by giving me acceptance and words of encouragement that I can do it. The world is so full of strife and disappointments. Kind words go a long way in encouraging others to keep going. So where do we start? We speak out of our hearts, don't we? And I want to spend a bunch of time talking about that. I just think that that's so important. It's so simple, but it's so true and so important. Caring, loving hearts will produce loving words. Bitterness and discontentment will produce critical and negative words. But if our focus is only on the words, we'll just keep fighting that battle again and again. It's sort of like a filter. Like you have a filter for your water, maybe, and it filters out the bad. And sometimes I think we want to stick a filter between our heart and our head, and we want to say, oh, we'll just be careful. You know, we'll just watch our words. But eventually, we won't always be able to control that. Our heart, what's in our hearts will come out. Luke 6:45, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. So clear. Just like it would be foolish for a gardener to, if he has a diseased tree, to pull the diseased fruit off and paste on good, a tree's good to its roots. And so we need to start at the roots. If we allow roots of anger or bitterness or self-pity, then that's the kind of fruit that we're going to produce. So let's fight the battle as God intends us to fight it at a hard level. Matthew 12:33-34 says, either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. So if we love good words, we'll speak them. And then that's what we'll reap, joy and blessing. If we love to gossip and put others down, then that's what we're going to reap. Once the heart is changed, the words will change. Proverbs 16:23 says, the heart of the wise teaches his mouth. And in the NIV, it says, a wise man's heart guides his mouth. So what's inside is going to come out. I have a cup here. It looks nice on the outside. I don't know if you're like me, but I think my coffee tastes better if I have a pretty mug. I like certain shapes. I like, so this cup, it looks nice on the outside, but you know what? It's inside. It's what's inside here that really matters to me or makes a difference. If it's hot, maybe it'll burn me. If it's bitter, it might disgust me. Or lemon juice or soapy water or something. Did you ever taste soap when you drank because your child didn't rinse it right? Well, that can disappoint you, spoil your day. But if it's some tasty tea or coffee, that will enhance your day, you'll enjoy it. Or maybe some honey and lemon will soothe your sore throat. So it's what's inside that will either bless or hurt me. And of course it's inside, it's what's inside our hearts that will either bless or curse those that are around us. It will come out in our words. You have the quote there in your handouts. A cup brimful of sweetness cannot spill even one drop of bitter water, no matter how suddenly jarred. Amy Carmichael said that. Our hearts are revealed by our words. We must take responsibility for what's inside. So, to get more practical, in our hearts, we need to love our schools. We need to be content in the calling that our husbands have. We may never be rich, at least not in money. Maybe we'll have to sacrifice if our husband is on the school board and he has to do extra meetings because of decisions they need to make. But contentment in our hearts with our husband's calling will enable him to excel and will be rich in other ways. We also need to have compassion in our hearts for the hurting, struggling students. We need to have patience with the young, inexperienced teachers. We need to have love and forbearance for the overprotective mom that maybe makes our husband's job a little harder. If we're at rest in our hearts, our words are going to bless our communities. As we abide in Christ, we're open to his spirit, and our speech is filled with grace. In 1 Thessalonians 5:11, it says, "Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up." I think that is one thing we just don't do enough of, is encouraging each other. As we use our tongues to encourage and bless, it makes our world a pleasant place. Frederick William Faber said, "Kind words are the music of the world." Encouraging words make for peaceful schools and communities. I think you've probably all experienced times where someone just said a couple words and it just made a huge difference. If we have time at the end, I would like to hear testimonies from you of times that words make a difference. And sometimes it's the kindness in the heart. It's not always the words themselves. Kind words are a gift anyone can afford to give. They are very cheap. Proverbs 16:24, "Pleasant words are as an honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones." I hope you're not tired of me reading these scriptures. I just think some of these are so beautiful, and they just get right to the point. And then the one that's in our title, "In her mouth is the law of kindness," about the virtuous woman. A couple years ago, I was to give a talk on the power of words. So it was a little bit like this, but slanted just a little bit different. Anyway, that morning I woke up not feeling well physically. And I just felt like in my head, I just felt like I couldn't get my thoughts together. I just didn't know how this was going to go, and I was sort of panicking. And so I sent a message to a couple people to pray for me. And one of the ladies from church sent me a voice message, and she prayed out loud for me. And it was such a beautiful prayer. And the most beautiful thing was about it was, in the background was a little voice repeating the prayer. And she was being an example to her little girl. I think that sometimes words that speak life to us aren't always spoken to us, but for us. And in this case, she was speaking to God for me. And it was a huge blessing to me. I think, just to insert a little bit, I think praying aloud for people is a really impacting way to bless others. The heart of love and care can be the power behind the words. So it's the kindness in our hearts that can give the words the power. The words are the avenue to bless. From a heart of, I believe in you, I care about you. Mother Teresa said, kind words can be short and easy to speak, but their echoes are truly endless. I think that there is a skill that we can learn about encouraging other people. If we just are purposeful. Proverbs 10:14 says, wise men store up knowledge, but the mouth of the fool invites ruin. So their knowledge was in relation to or compared with the mouth of the fool. I think we need to learn to understand people and what blesses them. And most of all, though, I think as we're in tune with the Spirit, have you ever had spoke a couple words to someone and later they told you how much that meant to them, and you didn't even realize that they weren't eloquent, or it was just a few words. And so that's the other side of it. But I think that kind speech can become a habit. We need to allow God to mold our hearts. We need to dwell on life-giving words. These life-giving words, as well as just good books and good words, we need to think kind thoughts and positive thoughts and be in the habit of giving the benefit of the doubt. Another thing that affects our speech, we've sort of touched on that, is the sincerity in our hearts. Always be sincere about your encouragement and your words. Speak the truth. Flattery only brings confusion. I think be specific. Specific. What the teacher did right, or what your husband did right. The truth may not always be easy, but if spoken from a heart of love and compassion, it will speak life into the person. If we're in tune with the Spirit, then we can speak life. One of my friends was talking about this subject, and she said, it's the heart connection, isn't it? She said her mother always would tell her, what comes from the heart goes to the heart. Our stammering lips don't always say things perfectly, but if it's love and sincerity that are in our hearts, and they feel that. I think I skipped the section about our husbands. Here we go. One of the most important ones, right? Or one of the hardest ones for me. when you get, in daily life, and the people that are closest to you sometimes hear the harshest words, don't they? So our speech can support and bless our husband's calling, or it can drag him down. Did you ever hear the quote, a woman cannot qualify a man for his ministry, but she can disqualify him? They won't ask my husband to teach school or be an administrator or be on the school board because of me and who I am. But if he is, and I can be a drag on his ministry, I can ruin his ministry, him fulfilling his responsibility by the words that I say. Maybe it's gossip. Maybe it's talking about the issues at hand to too many people. Or maybe it's snide remarks to him about, you know, maybe he felt responsible to spend extra time, and we want that time. So I think there's two ways that we can disqualify him. Personally, that he can't function like he should, and also with in gossip or talking to others too much. Men have fragile egos. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much sarcasm or just a little snide remark. And it hinders. It makes them feel like not trying. And another important thing is confidentiality. My husband used to be pretty careful that our children, you know, didn't hear the things that they should before it was public knowledge or whatever. And they used to get frustrated sometimes that there were, you know, so-and-so said at school this and that, and we never know before anybody else or whatever. But I think that is just so important that that we're confidential. Maybe the town gossip will come around and try to get something out of you, but we can't do that. Maybe our husbands come home tired or burdened and they don't know what to do about the matter at hand at school. But just a couple words of, I believe in you, you can do it, you're doing a good job, can make a world of difference. And I want to talk yet about gossip. Women are going to talk. We're emotional people, and our emotions come out in our words. And that's good, but gossip is one of the things that I think we need to be more honest about it and admit it for what it is. We can hide behind, oh, we want to know what was going on so we can pray, or I want to tell so-and-so, or I need a sounding board. And of course, there's proper ways and times for that. But I think we need to be honest about what's in our hearts. I did want to insert here, I got some of my points from Elizabeth George's book called The 10 Essentials of, oh, now I can't get the title exactly, but it's a book for women. I was going to bring it along and I didn't get to do that. Or I forgot. Anyway, she has a big section in there about gossip, and she's very straightforward about the horribleness of gossip. I think sometimes we do it out of thoughtlessness. It's maybe some of us are good storytellers. I'm not, but it's just fun to tell a juicy story, and we like to talk. But gossip ruins reputations. It separates friends. It causes strife. I'm sure you could all tell stories of times it's done that for you. Even reckless, thoughtless words can harm another. Elizabeth George says, the devil is the source. The word that gossip comes from, the Greek word, is diabolos. And it is used, well, it means malicious, gossip, slander, or false accuser. And it's used 34 times in the New Testament as a title for Satan. He's called the false accuser. And I think we need to take it seriously and really think about our words. She suggests that gossip, she has different reasons that that we gossip. Gossip comes from an evil heart and hatred. And we like to believe that, oh, well, I'm a Christian. My heart isn't evil. But she says some other reasons, some other causes. Foolishness in our hearts. Idleness. I think an example of foolishness, how it might come out in gossip, is just an embarrassing story. We embarrass someone just because this is a good story and it's funny and everybody laughs, but we just might shame them. They might take it deeply and personally. I just realized since I was here this morning that I have a wrong reference down, but somewhere in Timothy, I think it is, he's talking about the wives of the deacons. And I think this works for school leaders, or I don't know what part you play. It works for anybody, I'm sure. It's important for anybody. But they are to be grave and sober and faithful in all things.